the light of hope in their eyes. And though I'm far away, I still can hear them say, thumbs up. Or when the dawn comes up, there'll be wait and see. There'll be love and laughter and peace ever after tomorrow when the world is free. The shepherd will tend his sheep, the valley will bloom again, and Jimmy will go to sleep in his own little room again. There'll be bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover tomorrow, just you wait and see.
On 98FM and online, this is Phoenix FM.
Weather on Phoenix FM, proudly sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company for windows, doors, conservatories and extensions.
And this is your weather for Sunday, the 17th of March. Tonight is going to be partly cloudy with some clear spells, interspersed by showers through the evening. Mostly dry, though, overnight with some clear spells, patchy cloud later on. The winds are mostly light and the maximum temperature tonight will be 6 degrees. Monday morning, we're going to be waking up to a mostly dry and bright and sunny day. There's a chance of the odd shower in the morning with cloud thickening later in the afternoon and overnight. It's going to feel rather mild tomorrow with some light winds, but maximum temperatures will be 15 degrees. Balmy. It's going to be warm. That's your weather.
Weather on Phoenix FM, sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company, proudly serving Essex for over 50 years. Contact us on 0800 666 444 or visit sehbac.com for help with your home.
And welcome to the arts programme here on Phoenix FM. Our show this week is inspired by, earlier on in the week, on Thursday, it was National Social Prescribing Day. So we're going to be looking at what that is and why connecting culture and health is important for all of our well-being. We've got Professor Hilary Bungay from Anglia Ruskin University joining us to explore the connection between culture and health and give us her background into working as a professor and researcher in this field. Did you know that there's a huge celebration of volunteering in Basildon next weekend? Well, the Great Gathering Festival is a festival of free talks, workshops, events and happenings with food, music and lots of fun taking place from Thursday the 21st to Sunday the 24th of March next week. We'll hear from artist and curator Dan Thompson, who's going to be joining us to tell us more about that later on. And our playlist today is full of health and uplifting songs. So let's get on with the show. I'm Claire, and this is the Arts Programme on Phoenix FM.
I know a bundle of humanity. She's about so high. I'm nearly driven to insanity when she passes by. She's a sunny little honey, but oh, so hard to kiss. I'll try to overcome her vanity, and then I'll tell her this. I'm young and healthy, and you've got charms. It would really be a sin not to have you in my arms. I'm young and healthy, and so are you. When the moon is in the sky, tell me, what am I to do? If I could hate you, I'd keep away. But that ain't my nature. I'm full of vitamin A, say.
And that was the West End Orchestra and Singers with I'm Young and Healthy from 42nd Street to open our show today, all about culture and health and great things happening over in Basildon. So just to the top of the show there, we had 42nd Street, which is obviously a stage musical from the 1980s. It's based on a book the original book actually was much older than that, but the book from the stage musical was by Michael Stewart and Mark Bramble, with lyrics by Al Dubin and Johnny Mercer, and music by Harry Warren. The 1980 Broadway production won the Tony Awards for Best Musical and Best Choreography, and it became a long-running hit. It's had lots of updates and different variations over its career. It's a musical about musical comedy about the joys and dramas of bringing a Broadway show to life. It's told through the eyes of fresh-faced chorus girl Peggy Sawyer, and she's just off the bus from a small town in the States, and the musical depicts this kind of thrilling backstage world of showbiz, complete with scandal and intrigue, heartbreak, and despite it all, unrelenting hope, just like Phoenix FM. When the show's leading lady breaks her leg, Peggy is given the chance of a lifetime, and she must decide whether her dream of Broadway stardom is worth the cost. It's all set in the kind of post-depression era, and it's brimming with all that optimism and heart that you'd expect from a musical. The theatre producer Maggie Jones advises Peggy in the show, if you've been singing a sad and blue song, go into your dance. It's known for its phenomenal tap dancing. If you haven't seen it, it's an absolute delight for anyone interested in a show about what happens backstage. When it premiered at the Theatre Royal Drury Lane originally, there was a very, very young Catherine Zeta-Jones in the member of the original chorus. And almost like, you know, when fiction turns into reality, she was only 18, a virtual unknown. And at one performance, the actress playing Peggy Sawyer and her main understudy weren't available to perform. So Catherine Zeta-Jones filled in as the starry-eyed Peggy and soon became a star herself. So, gosh, there you go. Real life can come from art. And when it premiered on Broadway, it was a smash hit and it went on to win, as I said, the Tony Award. And then several years later, it was debuted in London's West End, where it also received the Olivier Award for Musical of the Year. It had a revised version on Broadway in 2001. And most recently, Sadler's Wells in London revived the show last year, complete with sparkling costumes and toe-tapping choreography. So if you didn't get a chance to see it, I couldn't find anything out about it coming back anywhere in London anytime soon, because presumably it's just done a big thing in Sadler's Wells recently. So keep an eye out for that, though. It's a rip-roaring show. And of course, you can watch it. You can watch it on the internet. You can watch it on as a film as well. So check that out, 42nd Street. If you haven't watched it, it's an oldie but a goodie. So that is the start of our show about culture and health. And that was, I've played that obviously because the title was I'm Young and Healthy. It's just me this week. Natalie is off on her travels again, doing some work outside of the UK this weekend. But what have I been doing this week? Well, I took a leap into, I keep thinking about all these amazing things that my kids get access to. And, you know, when I'm helping out the Hermit on a Friday, and I love presenting on the radio, which is amazing. But I thought, you know what? I really like singing. I'm not a great singer. I'm not going to suddenly, you know, I'm not going to be the soloist, but I actually really like singing. And what I really like about singing is the way that it makes me feel. And it really makes me feel quite happy. I definitely think that, you know, when a song comes on the radio or you're playing something in the car, then, you know, that immediate feeling when you start singing. And I travel up to Northumberland to see a long distance listener in Northumberland quite a few times in the year. And singing all the way to Northumberland just makes the journey so much better. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to try some singing. So I joined a local choir. It's an Essex-based choir called Funky Voices. You may have heard of it. And they have a session in Brentwood. They also have one in Colchester and one in Ipswich. And they come together each week to sing a range of, basically, what I was very pleased to see was a range of 80s music. So I was like, oh my goodness me, I know all these songs, I know all these beats, this is amazing. There's some really interesting mashups and various other things that the choreographer, the arranger puts together. So I went along and was welcomed by, oh gosh, there was probably about 80 people, 70 people in the room. It was a lot of people. It was really fun. Everybody really looked after, I dragged along my friend Wendy. Everyone really looked after me and Wendy, and we just had a laugh, and it was really, really cool. And they get to do the most amazing performances. So they're doing one in June at the Mercury Theatre in Colchester, but they also have done comic relief records with Tony Hadley and Eurasia. They have toured with, or at least played as part of Mike and Mechanics tour at the Royal Albert Hall. And I was like, oh, I thought I was just going along to this little local choir of, you know, people a bit like me who like singing. And then I was like, oh my god, they do proper performances. Anyway, I am now a member of Funky Voices. God help them. But it's fun. It's so much fun. And it just kind of, I was just thinking about how I wanted to do that, because it is about how it makes me feel. And of course, the show today is all about culture and health, and doing things like singing is good for your lungs and good for your health, but it's also good for your mental health and your social health. So it's also about kind of getting out there, being with other people, connecting through music and feeling that kind of joy of singing. And, you know, there are a range of singers in the group, but you don't have to audition. It's one of those really easy things where the arranger is so good, she's so good at what she does, she can kind of bring out and draw out the voices, and everybody gets to sing and everybody gets to play a part. So try out something like that. If you're thinking about what can I do that makes me really happy, and, you know, it might be singing, it might be, you know, doing some clay pot building, it might be going on a walk with your friends, whatever it is, have a go, do some more of it. Then the weekend's been lovely, hasn't it? It's been so nice and sunny, so it's been really nice to be outside as well. What else have I done this week? Well, I went up to London a couple of times this week, which was nice. It's always nice to go back as a visitor rather than as somebody who worked there for 20 odd years. And had some glorious food on Exmouth Market in Farringdon. But on the way there and all the way back, I've been listening to another book. So this time I've been dipping into the Cormoran Strike novels. So you may have heard of them. They've been adapted into TV programmes. There's about three or four episodes of those. And they were written by Robert Galbraith, which is the pseudonym of J.K. Rowling. And I really liked the TV shows, the TV adaptations. I haven't read any of the books. I thought, okay, I'll drop into this. I'll listen to the books instead because I don't have time to read anymore because I have to crochet at the same time, you see. So it's very important that I get to listen to books. So I was listening to The Ink Black Heart, which is the fourth or fifth in the series. And it's read by Robert Glenister, who's amazing. Love him as an actor. But oh my goodness me, it's long. There's 107 chapters. It's 32 hours. I was like, wow, this is quite a few journeys to London and back. So anyway, I'm trying it out. This one, I definitely think that this one is probably the hardest one to listen to because the story is all about the kind of premises that this kind of group of young people have created this kind of graphic novel series called The Ink Black Heart. And then some sort of fans, as you get with kind of fan fiction, fans have developed it into an online game. So a lot of it's about the chat within the online game and also the chat within social media. So poor old Robert Glenister has to read out at Inky Heart 3 said to in response to and it's just like, oh my goodness me. So listening to that stuff is quite hard. I have to say that I fast forwarded through some of it, so I'm probably feeling like I don't really understand entirely all of the plot, and I should probably have read it in paper than tried to listen to it. But you know, Robert Glenister is doing his very best to make it all sound as interesting as possible. So anyway, I don't know who done it yet. I think after 107 chapters, I think I'm on 89 and I still haven't got a clue what is going on. Anyway, it's fun. And it's one of those things where there's a detective story, obviously. And Cormoran Strike is a retired military officer who's been retired out through an accident. And he sets up a business with his partner, Robin, who comes to the kind of detective world brand new. And that's kind of been developing, that relationship has been developing in the first kind of three, four series. So we're now in that place, a bit like with One Day, Will They, Won't They, Will They, Won't They. So that's kind of the undercurrent underneath all of that is, will they ever actually just say to each other, quite like you? Robert Galbraith or J.K. Rowling is just keeping us going that little bit longer. Anyway, I also went to, I've talked about this before on the show, there's an organisation or at least a group, a network called Ignite Chelmsford. So that's kind of representing the creative voice in Chelmsford, who meet quite regularly at a social once a month at an organisation called Patch in Chelmsford. You can join up to Ignite Chelmsford if you are creative and living or working in Chelmsford or just love creativity and you want to be involved in a nice, a really supportive network in Chelmsford. You can go along to their monthly socials or you can turn up to the online hub meetings, which are also I think they're during the day on could be a Tuesday or Thursday, I can't remember, but you can find out all about that at ignitechelmsford.co.uk. The monthly socials are all on Eventbrite, so you can find out what those are all about. There's lots of different topics and themes. This week was all about community festivals and how to co-create festivals with local people at the heart of it so that their stories and narratives are told and shared. And the next session is on Thursday the 11th of April, and it's going to be exploring cult classics, comic books, cartoons and cosplay, so all the C's. So if you want to join in with that, have a look on Eventbrite for Ignite Chelmsford. And of course I was helping out at the Hermit on Friday, which is open to anyone from the ages of 13 to 19 to come and join in. It's a music club, it's not a social club, it's not like a youth centre, but it is very much about if you want to come and play music, get into a band, rehearse and have a bit of fun with music. If you're already in a band, bring your band along, and if you're not and you'd like to get on stage, we'll put a band together, no problem. We're going to have some live gigs in the summer, fingers crossed. So join in and get your chance to perform with a group of like-minded musical friends. Anyway, the show is now full of lovely other people that came to speak with me during the week. So I had the amazing opportunity to speak to Professor Hilary Balding at, not Balding, Hilary Bungay at University, Anglo-Ruskin University, who told me all about, we talked about culture and health and why culture and health and bringing those two disciplines together is really important for our well-being. Because it was National Social Prescribing Day last week. And social prescribing, if you haven't heard about it, is kind of an alternative to just going to your GP and asking for kind of medical support from that you might get kind of a prescription for. It's also thinking about beyond just the prescription. You might need that prescription for those for that medication, but you also might need some other things. So social prescribing helps people to be prescribed things like social groups or activities where you can join in with something else, or it might be walking, or it might be, you know, something exercise based, but it could also be, and this is what we're talking about today, is kind of bringing together the kind of more social prescribing and culture. So it might be joining an art group, or it might be a singing group, a bit like what I was talking about before, about me joining a singing group. So social prescribing is a thing within the NHS, and there's lots of different variations of it across the UK. And I think there's lots more evidence, as we hear from our conversation with Hilary Bungay, there's lots more evidence about why joining up culture and health is really important. So we're going to hear from that in a minute, but let's get to our music first. And this is Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark with Healing.
Set the course and feel the breeze.
FM.
At Active Signs and Designs Limited, our team are passionate about getting you noticed. First impressions are everything. So if you're driving a commercial vehicle, how are people seeing you? Our vehicle graphic products and well-designed signage can make you stand out from the crowd. Give the team a call on 01708 343 555 or visit us at activesignsanddesigns.co.uk and start getting your business noticed today.
Are you hungry? Then why not try an award-winning Indian takeaway from Hut and Spice? All our meals are cooked to order using the freshest ingredients, bringing you the finest traditional Indian dishes. To order, visit our website at www.hutandspice.com or give us a call on Brentwood 226 124 and see why we're the favourite choice of customers across Brentwood to Billericay.
Leolino Billericay is an exquisite modern Lebanese restaurant featuring a beautifully expansive outdoor garden and a private dining room. A perfect setting to celebrate any occasion. We take pride in serving traditional dishes infused with a delightful modern twist, meticulously crafted using only the finest ingredients. To book a table or inquire about exclusive venue hire, call us on 01277 714 777 and join us to indulge in the epitome of modern Lebanese hospitality.
Do you or someone you know have a drug problem?
Talk to someone that has been there.
Narcotics Anonymous is a group of recovering addicts that has found a new way to live without the use of drugs.
For a confidential chat or to find your local meeting, call 0300 999 1212 or visit our website ukna.org.
Take the first step to recovery.
Phoenix FM.
And that is, of course, the wonderful Kate Bush with Running Up That Hill that was chosen by my guest, Hilary Bungay. Let's have a listen to my interview with Hilary now. We talk about all of her, about her work at Anglia Ruskin University, and then also we get into the detail of arts and health. So let's listen to that now. I say a warm welcome to my guest, Dr. Hilary Bungay. Welcome to the arts programme on Phoenix FM, Hilary. Thank you so much for joining me here today.
You're welcome. Nice to be here. Thank you.
And you are a Professor of Arts, Health and Wellbeing at Anglia Ruskin University. We'll just call it ARU for short. But can you tell us, first of all, what does your role entail? What does a Professor of Arts, Health and Wellbeing do? And is there such a thing as a typical day?
No, there's not really a typical day, I would say. A lot of it is line management and writing bids, having meetings, that sort of thing. My interesting bit is interacting with students. So I supervise PhD students, doctoral students, and also actually doing the research. So for me, the interesting bit is actually doing the research, writing about the research, talking to my external partners, listening to and people from different disciplines as well. I think because my role is such that it is that I across both the sectors of art and health, I end up talking to people who are very interesting to me, you know, outside the health. I mean, health people are interesting as well, but actually talk to different arts partners. I find it very stimulating to talk to different people from different disciplines, I suppose. That's what I would say. But no 2 days are the same. I can have a day full of meetings with different people, but then another day that I'll be sitting, you know, just tapping out on the computer. So probably not a lot different from a lot of other people, really.
So you've come from a health background, have you? Kind of your original training. But is this an unusual combination within a university to put arts and health together?
I think it's relatively recent. When I first started out with this and got into this, it's about, I don't know, in the mid-2000s. And I was working as a lecturer in health. So my background was radiography at the time, but I did a PhD related to health services research. And I was invited to, or applied to do a secondment, which was doing research with singing in older people. And the reason that I was interested in that was because I'd done research with older people previously. And I didn't actually have any sort of commitment or beliefs in whether singing could make a difference to anybody's health and well-being. But I was interested in the older people side of it. And then having got into it and actually seeing what happened in the group sessions, I was converted and became very interested in the arts more generally and how it can impact on people's health and well-being. So at that time, I worked at in Folkestone. There's a research centre, an arts and health research centre. But that was very new. There was only one other place, I think, in the country that was doing something similar. There'd been the medical humanities, so people had looked at medical humanities. But so, no, arts and health at that time was fairly new. And it's just grown from there, really. So it's fairly unusual.
I mean, obviously, you said you were coming at it from the health perspective. Just to join up your cultural creative background, what were the things that you enjoyed that were inspirations from your childhood or things that you enjoyed doing as a young person or as an adult?
I didn't really have an arts and cultural background.
People say that, and then you suddenly start to uncover, oh, well, actually, you know, radio was a huge part of my family. You know, we listened to the radio, we listened to music, we listened to the Archers every week or whatever it was. So you kind of, people say that, and then you start to uncover, like, the breadth of cultural activities that you do without even thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, I suppose at that time, my son, you know, children were playing instruments, musical instruments. I mean, I played piano very badly as a teenager. You know, everybody does that. I liked musicals, very much into musical theatre and that sort of thing. Yeah. My mum had a theatre background in the sense that she did a lot of Amdram. But really, I wasn't somebody who sat and drew. I wasn't a drawer. I used to write stories as a child, so I had creative writing. But no, I wouldn't say that I had a cultural or artistic bent, really, I would say.
I think all of us have, though. I think it's just, you know, it's the engagement and the taking part in it. It doesn't have to be that you are the performer on the stage or the, you know, the illustrator of the book, but it but your experience of it and your engagement and your enjoyment of it. It's your cultural story. That is your creative story. So so you're kind of bringing this, there is a love of culture in there, and you're bringing this together with your experience and your knowledge of health. So, I mean, we're talking today, our program is all about arts and health, and we thought we'd ask you to help us sort of set the scene about why it's important. And you said, like, it's a growing cross-sector connection between culture and health, and has been over the last sort of 20 years. Why is it important to bring arts and culture and health together? And what are some of those positive impacts on people's well-being?
If we think about people and humans, there's instances of art which go back, you know, thousands of years, you know, the first cave paintings, people who carried water, that made water carrying vessels, you know, they decorated them, they're highly decorated. You know, if you go into the museums and things, you see these highly decorated items which are, you know, prehistoric. And, you know, the first musical instruments, you know, they use bones and animals. So people have always, humans have always had that creativity, I think. And humans are inherently creative, and no matter how they do that, whether it's problem solving but or using it artistically. So I think it's always been something within us. And I think probably one of the things that the pandemic showed is just how many people, when the world sort of stopped and they were in their homes, that they actually turned back to arts and crafts and arts and creativity, and would do things that perhaps when they were children or had done as teenagers and went back to artwork. So I think probably when the world stopped like that, people went back into more of those sorts of things. But I think we've always, everybody's done it. And I think group art activities, you know, when people sing in a choir, then there's the way that those relationships can form, which they don't form in other sorts of areas. Why is it important? Why do we do art? You know, it's something that it helps us, it absorbs us. We think about different things, or we don't think about the everyday when we're doing art in some way. This concept called flow, isn't there? You know, when you are so engaged with something that it blocks out the everyday. Yeah. But also singing with other people, you get this sense of camaraderie, which you don't from just hanging around and talking with people. It can be quite instant when you're singing with other people. You know, why do football fans sing? You know, or rugby fans, you know, why do they sing? You know,
it's a belonging, isn't it? I definitely, I mean, that's a really good example of football fans singing, because it's the sense of belonging around the team and the connecting, and you have to know those songs, and you know, it is a group event when those things happen. So yeah, I think that whole sense of beyond just well-being, it's I mean, well-being's a huge topic, but I think culture plays such a strong role in our ability to connect with other people.
I've thumbed the dogged pages of my paperback life, reread confusing passages that never I'm not an angel, but then again, I'm no fake, and I don't regret a single day.
nights and late night conversations.
Particularly in the last 10 years or so, there's also lots more evidence, isn't there, about how culture combined with health can both prevent and then alleviate health concerns. I'm quite conscious that the sector has been starting to think more about the way it evidences that impact and that needs. What have you seen in the last kind of 10 years around that change of how we're recording that impact and how we're kind of making the case, really?
Well, you're right. I mean, there's been a lot more research over the last 10, 15 years, and people are trying to use similar measures, so an assessment tools to try and capture it. Because one of the things with a lot of the arts and health activities that go on that are labelled as such, they tend to be quite small groups. So you'll have, you know, you might have an arts on prescription programme, and it might run for 12 weeks and you'll have 10 people in that group. So actually you only get perhaps data, if you're collecting data, from 10 participants, and then the program might not run again for another couple of months. So then you might get another 10 people. So what's happening now is people are looking at trying to do bigger, larger studies, and on the basis, and it's a bit of a shame really that when people want to fund activities and they want evidence for funding, they want to say, well, what is the evidence? And they want to say, well, show me the numbers. You know, that has been a cry across, you know, from commissioners, health commissioners, you know, what are the numbers? You know, how many people can this impact? You know, if they do this for how long, you know, what dose do they need? You know, so it's this sort of thing. There is a move away from that more now, and people are more willing to look at more qualitative measures. But I think over the years that has changed, but also there's a larger body of evidence growing. So if more people are doing this research, you can then look at a large group of it. So, well, actually, this it's not just one piece of research where one group have done this. There's actually other groups around the country who've done this, and we can look across the country and look at different art activities as well. So I think that's what's changed. There's just been larger studies being done, but also people are amalgamating data from across different studies to be able to say, well, actually, we can say there is evidence for this from more people. So we've got evidence that this does work for people. It's more difficult to show preventative, because actually, how do you then say, well, if we didn't do this, how is that going to change what happens to somebody? But actually, there is evidence, so with arts and health, so like singing groups that they do with people can show there's been people with lung conditions, they've shown a change there, people with dance, with Parkinson's, with people with dance. But there's also been groups when you're working with people with dementia and their carers, if you could do the groups with them singing, then actually the people can talk about how they can do something with their loved one, which perhaps they might be able to do for something, so something that they can share together. So there's just more examples, I think, and there's more, because it's more interest from the research community, but also from the creative industry and creative practitioners, as opportunities, I suppose, to promote their work, then it is growing.
And do you think that the interest is growing in the health sector as well? Because, you know, one of the things that I'm obviously in the creative sector, and one of the things that I see a lot of across the country is what you're talking about, all these examples of fantastic projects that are going into care homes, that are going into hospital settings. There's been quite a long established program around art in hospitals, hasn't there, for various different places across the country, and for various different reasons, and very much kind of moving away from the, it's not just about decorating the walls to make the environment look better. It's much, much more innovative and much more interactive than that. So do you think that the NHS is starting to think differently about arts on prescription?
I think aspects of the NHS are, and if you look across different places, so for example, in Gloucester, there's a very well-established arts on, well, they call it arts on referral in Gloucester, which has been championed by a GP, Simon Ofer, and they've been going for over 10 years now, and they've have arts on prescription, arts on referral that goes, runs through the GP surgeries, and actually they have the, some of the groups actually in the GP surgery, and people are referred by the GPs into those groups, and they, so that's one example. I know, because I work, I'm in Cambridge and I work, worked in Addenbrookes, you know, they have dance with the patients in Addenbrookes as well, but they also work with staff as well, because actually they recognise that it's been an issue with staff wellbeing as well. So the arts team there also work with staff as well as patients, and they've had different activities. I don't know if there's been a big sea change across the NHS. I think it's little steps.
Sometimes things do take a large amount of time and focus and policy and all the rest of it to move, and it is like moving an enormous tanker, you know, it takes time to turn its direction. But do you see that there are sort of specific blocks or challenges to not making that happen? You know, are there things that you're aware of from the creative sector or from the health sector that are potential blocks to that tanker being turned in a different direction?
Well, I think there's the main block, I think, still is around the evidence and what the evidence is and the strength of the evidence. But I also think it's about raising awareness with clinicians and practitioners about the possibilities and opportunities that are out there for creative health opportunities. So I think those are barriers. But also perhaps not... I think we have to accept as well that it's not for everybody, so not everybody wants to be part of an arts group and everything. I mean, much of my research is around participatory arts, so people doing it in a group, not as individuals. And not everybody is comfortable in that in a group situation, so it's a case of making sure that you match people to the right activity in the right group. But then a big issue again is funding as well. You know, how do you get the funding for sustainability, for sustained projects? Because it's no good having a few projects, piecemeal projects or, you know, short projects, then those projects stopping. Because, you know, for GPs, so like for social prescribing, if you have some arts and health activities going on in around in a GP's area, and then the project is funded, it's not funded by the GP surgeon. The GP surgeon will refer a patient to that, but they're not paying for that, although it's on prescription. The prescription doesn't follow the patient in these cases. So what will happen is the arts organisation will get funding from a charitable organisation or some funding body to provide these projects. The project might last for 12 weeks, it might last for 6 months. The funding comes to an end. The arts organisation has then got to find additional funding. That might not happen straight away, in which time the GP says, well, that service is no longer running, so they forget about it. So, you know, that can be an issue. So I think, you know, funding, you need consistent funding and continuity. Mm. So healthcare practitioners, whether that's social prescribing link workers or GPs or people working in GP surgeries, know that that service is available and that they can refer their patients securely to that, and have confidence in it that it's running, but also that the people who are running it can manage the people who they're referring.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, when you start thinking about all the people involved in that process, there's care about all of them in that process, isn't there? So the kind of, you know, care from the GP's perspective, knowing that he or she is referring something that is going to be good quality and is going to be something that that person needs. There's the person who's receiving that support and that care, that it's a good experience for them. And then there's also the cultural creative industries person who's offering that support, and how those people who, you know, may have had some training, may have had some experience of working in that way, but they still also need support, because I imagine in quite a few cases cultural social prescribing, arts on prescription, apart from the kind of physical challenges that people have, a lot of the kind of more mental health challenges have ended up being referred through to cultural activities, haven't they? And that in itself, as an artist coming to that practice and coming to work with those different people with different challenges, that in itself needs to be thought through, doesn't it, in terms of how to support that artist.
Yeah, and who has responsibility for the patient when the patient is there? Because if you know, yes, the artist might have training, but it's a level of training that they have, and it's that it's being safe, it's having that safe, secure environment for everybody. So the people are being referred, the artist is safe, the people are referred, and the group is safe. So it's that, make sure that the environment is safe for everybody, as well as creative. That's the other thing, you don't want to put too many sort of measures in, blocks in, about people's creativity. But on the other hand, being creative can be triggering as well, and cause upset for people. So how do then the artists manage that and the rest of the group if somebody becomes upset? So that has to be thought about.
Charging Systems, your local, independent and experienced specialist home and workplace charge point suppliers and installers. With over 1,000 installations throughout Essex and East London and a 5-star excellent Trustpilot rating, we provide great personal service and are committed to help Essex drivers go green. Visit www.evchargingsystems.co.uk or call us on 01268 710 459. Install, charge and go with EV Charging Systems.
The elements influence us each year, whether it's heat in summer or cold in winter. At JWD, we can take care of all your heating and air conditioning needs at a reasonable price, with finance available through our partners Can Do, if required. Our engineers give their promise to be clean and tidy, whilst carrying out works to the highest standard. Give us a call on 0776 009 239 or visit our social media pages at JWD Heating.
The all-new Players Lounge has got everything you need for the perfect night out. With two bars, a restaurant and the best sound and lighting system in Essex. With regular special events and guest DJs, you're always guaranteed a brilliant night at Players. Book now at players-lounge.co.uk.
Want to get the home improvements you've always dreamed of without breaking the bank? Thanks to SEHBAC, you can now transform your home for less. We're offering up to 40% off our extensive range of high-quality windows, doors, conservatories and extensions. Plus, 2 years interest-free finance available. Get the inspiration you need and breathe new life into your home at a price you can afford by visiting your nearest SEHBAC showroom or SEHBAC.com. Terms and conditions apply.
Phoenix FM.
Some of the projects that you've been involved in have had that benefit of being within a structured environment. So the work that you've been doing with Magic Me on care homes.
Yeah.
So the idea is, I suppose, there is that you're going into an environment that is set up to deal with some of those issues. And you've got one of the things that I took away from the work that you'd done was very much that the work wasn't just about the people living in the care homes, it was about the staff and the management around that care home and how much they engaged with that as a project.
Yes, yeah, no, absolutely. The work with Magic Me, it was about arts organisations working with care home staff to help them develop their practice so they could work with the residents creatively and to do activities with the residents outside when the artists couldn't go there, and to help them to learn about different activities that they could do, perhaps that you hadn't thought about before. Another example, though, actually, I was a trustee of a charity in Cambridgeshire who provide arts on prescription called Arts and Minds. And when they provided the arts on prescription, what they had, they'd have an artist, but they'd also have a counsellor present in the room as well. So if somebody did become upset for whatever reason, then actually the counsellor was there to sort of hold that person, if you like, while the artist could then carry on with the creative activities that were going on. But that was just one model that they had. And actually, you can, likewise, you can imagine in the one that I gave the example in Gloucester, that would be in the GP surgery, so there'd be healthcare professionals around in that situation as well.
And it certainly feels that, particularly over the last four or five years, when we're hearing so many more cases, so many more statistics, particularly of young people, you know, the kind of the challenge of young people entering the work. I mean, I was reading something the other week about there's more people under 35 that are off sick with anxiety and depression than ever before. And you just kind of think, you know, all of those services that are, you know, all of that support that needs to come via the NHS services, it feels like there is a kind of crunch point coming, doesn't there, where actually... it's been a gone. But alternative ways of supporting people is becoming even more important. So is there anything that you think the creative industries need to do to help make that case stronger as to how they can be a reliable source of support for people's health and wellbeing?
I suppose it's a really difficult question, isn't it, for creative industries? You know, I suppose showing that they're